Today's share in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Yuma, Daf Chaf Aleph. You're learning today Le'ili Nishmas Larry Iram's mother, Eve Iram, Chava Bas Moshe. All the Nishans we learn for should have an Aliyah. Today's Gemara will begin about 6 or 7 lines down from the top of Chaf Aleph Omer Aleph, with the words of Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav. So, Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, Bishar Shi Yisrael Olim L'Regel, when the Jewish people came up to be Olim L'Regel, the Shlosh Regalim, as well as Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, Omdim Tzvufim, when they would stand in the Azara area. Now, you have to remember, we spoke about how the Azara was unbelievably small. It was a strip that was 175 amos long in its east-to-west orientation. Only 11 amos of that was where the Anshei Yisrael would stand. And that was the first 11 amos as you came in through Shaar Niknar. And the width was 135 amos. So the entire Klai Yisrael essentially was standing in an area a little bit more, we'll see in a second, than this 11 amos by 135 amos area. Let's assume an amos is 2 feet even. So it's 22 feet by 270 feet. All of Klai Yisrael fit into that area. So Omdim Tzvufim, when they were standing, they were unbelievably cramped together. Rashi explains the Lashon of Tzvufim is a Lashon of Tzof, like floating. Merov Am, there were so many people there. Hayu Nidchokim Ishbiach, everybody was pressing against everybody else. Ben Lomokom Lintos Altsido, you couldn't turn to your right, Lekano Lekano, to your left, you couldn't move. V'zokuf Kikora, and they were standing straight up like a beam. Afraglov Nitolim Yalor, it's the people like floating because of the pressure of all the people, some of them were being lifted up. And yet, this is one of the greatest miracles. Umishtachavim Ruvachim, when they would bow down and they would say the vidui and they would say their admissions of guilt to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mishtachavim Ruvachim, there was plenty of space for everybody to bow down, takes Dalet Amos, there was plenty of room. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made an ace. V'nimshochim Achasisrei Amma Achorei Beis HaKaporis. Now, the people spread out, not only purely in this 11 amma by 135 amma area. Now, they couldn't go straight forward east to west, but around the perimeter of the Azara, they were also allowed to go. So, in the area all the way due north and all the way due south, there was a small little strip. And then they would go through that strip all the way up until the sides of the Heichal itself, the Ulam and the Heichal. And there they could also go. So, there was a little bit more space over there. And then in the 11 amma behind the Heichal, so there was room there as well. So you had another 11 amma by 135 amma area behind the Heichal, and then you had a strip right next to the northern border and by the southern border, the perimeter of the Azara, and maybe a little bit more area by the sides of the Heichal. The Heichal itself was 70 amma wide. The Ulam was 100 amma wide, so those areas also could fit a couple of people in them. And nevertheless, this was an unbelievable nace that all of Klai Yisrael was able to fit into this area. Now, the Gemara asks, why did you tell me that they could go into this 11 area behind? My comment, what exactly did you mean to say? If it's an ace, so why did they need that extra area there? So, Hachi Kamar, this is what the Gemara is telling us, that Amar Yehuda Rav said, even though the people were able to go also into this area behind the actual Heichal itself, nevertheless, you think that there's still going to be extreme crowding. And there was. For Omdim Tzufim, even there, everybody was standing so pressed together. And like they were floating because of the pressure of all the people. They couldn't turn left or right at all. Nevertheless, Kishem Mishtachim, they would bow down. Mishtachim Mirvachim. There was plenty of room for everybody. Again, an actual miracle that everybody could witness. And then the Gemara goes and tells us that there were many such miracles, especially in the Bayis Rishon, as we'll see, but even in the Bayis Shedi. V'zeh Echod, this miracle that we just said now, that Omdim Tzvufim U'mishtachim Mirvachim, it's a very famous statement. Omdim Tzvufim U'mishtachim Mirvachim, this was one of those 10 miracles that the Gemara is now going to describe. V'zeh Echod Mi'asar Nisim Shinasim B'Beis HaMikdash, that were done in the Beis HaMikdash. Did not, because there's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, right, we're in the time between Pesach and Shavuos, so we learn Pirkei Avos. Many have the minhag to learn Pirkei Avos, especially in Shabbos afternoon between Mincha and Ma'ariv. So the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos tells us, Asar Nisim Nasu B'Beis HaMikdash. There were 10 Nisim that were done in the Beis HaMikdash. This is one of the things that we don't realize how much we miss the Beis HaMikdash. If somebody ever needs a shot of emunah, if somebody ever is feeling a little bit down and doesn't believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's majesty and total omnipotence over the entire world, all you have to do is go to the Beis HaMikdash and see a nace, and that would restore your tremendous emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it says there that there were these 10 nisim that was able to be seen in the Beis HaMikdash. Number one, lo hipid lo isham reach b'sar kodesh. We know that a pregnant woman can sometimes get certain cravings, and there would be potentially tremendous, beautiful, aromatic aroma coming off from the korbanos. It's a barbecue. We all know how good a barbecue smells. And nevertheless, women aren't allowed to eat from certain korbanos. Men are also not allowed to eat from certain korbanos. Only pirchei kuhuna can eat from certain korbanos. And nevertheless, this beautiful aroma that would be coming off, this barbecue would be coming off, you might have thought that it would make a woman have a craving and could lead Rachmon al-San to having a miscarriage. So it tells us never, not once in the history of the Beis HaMikdash did a woman ever miscarry because of the Reach B'Sar HaKodesh. Number two, lo yisriach b'sar hakodesh me'olam. The meat never became spoiled. Again, you're in the hot Mediterranean sun in the summertime. Nevertheless, meat never spoiled. Even though the meat was out, you're allowed to eat the korban shlam and meat for a period of time of 2 days and the night in between. So imagine without refrigeration, leaving meat out, right? Department of Health regulations don't recommend that meat be out really more than an hour or two. So here you are in the hot Mediterranean sun and you have meat out and it never spoiled. Number three. Lo nires zvuv bebeis hamit b'chayim. Imagine in a butcher house, right? If anybody's ever been to a schlachting house, a slaughterhouse, it can be filled with flies. And imagine where you have a barbecue and you just have meat out in a backyard picnic, how many flies come? So there never was a single fly in the beis hamit b'chayim, in the area where they would go and shecht all these animals and rinse off the animals in the Azari itself. And nevertheless, there were no flies around. Again, the presence of the Shechina prevented any flies from being there. Number four, lo era keri l'kohen gadol b'yom kippurim. The Kohen Gadol never had an emission of keri, a seminal emission, on the night of Yom Kippur, because this was a nes that occurred. Now, we made many preventative measures. We made the Kohen Gadol stay up all night. We didn't allow him to eat certain foods in order to prevent this, because ein somchel al hanes. But nevertheless, no Kohen Gadol ever had a carry emission on night of Yom Kippur. That was number four. Number five, lo nimtzo psul ba'omer. When they went to gather the carbon omer, the barley they would gather on the first night of Chol HaMoed in Eretz Yisrael of Pesach, so they had to go and harvest the barley. They had to sift it 13 times, as Rashi tells us, and it was a very big investment in time. And if this then would become possible, so they'd be really stuck. So never once in all the history did they ever have a psul in the omer. Number six, same thing, the Shnei Halechem. The Shnei Halechem are the two breads that are bought with the Kivsei Atzeres, the Karban Shlomim that is a Tzibur Karban Shlomim on Shavuos, the only time we have a Tzibur that is a Karban Shlomim. And these breads were not allowed to be baked on Yontif. The Gemara Menachos goes through the details as to the drushes of the Psukim. So they couldn't be baked on Yontif, they had to be baked beforehand. So what happens if they became possible on Yontif? You'd be stuck. Never happened. Next, uvelechem apadim. The lechem apadim also were not allowed to be baked on Shabbos. They had to be put on the Shulchan on Shabbos. The old ones from the week before, which we'll see a miracle happen with those as well, were taken off on Shabbos, and the new ones were slid in. According to one opinion, they were, as you were sliding off the old ones, you put on the new ones, so it was l'fanai tomit. Another opinion says, no, you just have to take off the first ones, as long as they were still, the new ones were put on Shabbos, that would be fine. So the lechem apadim were not allowed to be baked on Shabbos as well, so there never was a psul in the lechem apadim. Then we have ar, Nes, Omdim, Tzufim, Umishtachim, and Revochim, even though they were tightly pressed together when they're standing up, when they bowed down to do their vidui, so then there was plenty of room for everybody. And then, Velohizik, Nochosh, the Akrov, Yerushalayim, Yolam, we never had a snake or a scorpion hurt anybody in Yerushalayim. Now, here we're talking about Yerushalayim, before we'll mention this in a second. Until now, we've been talking about the Beis HaMikdash, now we're talking about general Yerushalayim. So, we never had a snake or a scorpion attack people in Yerushalayim, which was, again, an area, the Mepharshim say, where there was a prevalence of snakes and scorpions in that general area, so there were no attacks ever in Yerushalayim. And finally, the last one of the ten that the Mishnah in Avos tells us is, V'lo Amar Adam L'Chaveiro, nobody ever said to a friend, which for people that are a stiff-necked people, Am Kshei Yorif, that's an amazing statement to make, that nobody ever said, Tzar li hamokom sha'olin b'Yerushalayim. It is difficult for me to have come here to Yerushalayim. The accommodations, Rashi says, Tzar li hamokom mizonosai, the food that they gave me was bad. Or that the place where I was staying, Dirasi, the chukah. So nobody ever said that the food and the accommodations in Yerushalayim weren't stellar, which is a very, very big nace. Now, Gemara says, he started off the first eight, we're talking about Beis HaMikdash, Pasach B'Mikdash, and then the last two, we see him Yerushalayim. What's going on? So Gemara says, no, Ika Tarti achriniyasa b'mikdash. No, there are another two that are in the Beis HaMikdash. And the Rabbeinu Chananel says that when we're originally discussing this, these first 10 were made, but then when we wanted to put down the 10 that were done in the Mikdash, so these last two were ultimately added to make it the 10 that were in the Mikdash. So, the Tanya, it says in the Braisa, me'olam lo kibu gishamim eish shal atzei marocha. It could be a pouring rain, it could be a thunderstorm, and yet the flames on the Mizbeach, which were open, it didn't have a canopy, it didn't have a roof on it, so nevertheless, right, you have a fire, the flames will be put out in a drenching, torrential rain. Never happened. That the fire on top of the Mizbeach, we'll learn later in the Masechta that there were three fires, some say four, some say five different pyres, P-Y-R-E, that were on top of the Mizbeach, and we'll see what the purpose of they were, the Machlokis as to whether there were three, whether there were four, or there were five, and those pyres never went out. That's what we have, the Ner Tamid, the concept of having an eternal light that shuls have is Kineged, the Mizbeach that always had a fire on it. And then finally, the last one, the second of the two additional ones about the Mikdash, we have the Ashan HaMarocha, the smoke that came off of these pyres that were on the top of the Mizbeach. This is the outer Mizbeach. Afilu kol harucho sheba olam bos umenashus bo. If you have hurricane winds, you have very strong winds. Ein mezizos oso mimkomo. We'll learn a little bit about this. Smoke that came off there was in the shape of a lion in the first base of Mikdash, was in the shape of a dog in the second base of Mikdash, as we'll see in the Gemara. The winds could never really blow this. It would move it, the Gemara will tell us later on, but it never dispersed this ashan, this smoke cloud that came off of the Mizbeach, so it could move it a little bit, but it never dispersed it. So these are the 10 miracles in the Mikdash, and we had the two extra that were in Yushalayim. Murray says, Vesu Lekka, really, this is it. There's so many more miracles. What about the following? Vatanya, Rav Shemaya Bikalnevo. Rav Shemaya said the following Braisa. He was a Tana, and he lived in a place called Kalnevo. So Rashi in Zvachim tells us that this place was Nikra, Al Shem Avodas Kochovim, the Ksiv Keres, or some I think have the gears of Kerem, Keres Nevo, which is Kalnevo. So that's the name of a place, a famous place where they had Avodah Zarah. In any event, it says over there in this braisa, Rav Shmaya said, Shivrei Klei Cheres, the broken earthenware utensils. When you cooked something inside a earthenware utensil, so it would have the bleos, it would absorb. Now, a Klei Cheres can't be matired. You can't put a Klei Cheres into fire and be kashering it. So therefore, you would have no sar inside these Klei Cheres, so it had to be broken. Klei Cheres, the tahara of a Klei Cheres is to break it. So you tots. So therefore, these Shivrei Klei Cheres, you had lots of chatos, lots of ashim, lots of shlomim pots that were made out of earthenware utensils, and earthenware material in the Azara area, wasn't allowed to leave the Azara. So therefore, the Shivrei Klei Cheres were nivloim b'mekomam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made an eitz that they were swallowed up by the ground. The Tosfos Yeshayim says this is talking specifically only about the dam chatos. And the Gemara in Zvachim tells us, and he says, Mukach sheshvirason b'mokum kodesh, it had to be specifically broken in the Azara area. However, the Tosfos Yeshayim says, Avolo yadinon mikra, I don't know where the Pasuk tells us, that achar shvirason, enu yochol lo tzuyam misham, why couldn't it be taken out after it was broken? But the general understanding that it's talking about the bleos from the various korbanos, which still were nosar, and therefore weren't allowed to be taken outside the Azara. And they had to be burned in the Azara. So they were miraculously swallowed up into the ground. The Amar Abaye said, Moro v'notza. Likewise, carbon ola of a bird, so it wasn't sacrificed on the Mizbeach. Chatas was sacrificed partially on the Mizbeach and partially eaten by the Kohanim. But the ola bird offering, Moro v'notza, the Moro is known as the crop of the bird. That's like outcropping in the esophagus where the food is stored and partially digested mechanically. And the notes and the feathers of this ola, as well as v'dishun mizbeach ha'pinimi, the ash that was taken off in the Mizbeach HaPnimi, the golden Mizbeach inside the Heichal, so we mentioned never had korbanos actually put on it. It occasionally had blood offerings put on it from certain korbanos, like the Par Helam Dovah Shel Tzibor, and on the Avodah of Yom Kippur, as we'll see later in the Masechta, but it did have the incense, the Torah burned on it, and it had to be cleaned off every day, as well as Vedishan HaMenorah, the Hatovas HaNeros, that we talked about, the five Neros and then the two Neros, so the ash, the remnants from those two areas, the Mizbeach HaPnimi, and the Hatovas HaNeros of the menorah, so that was also placed in the same place where they had the Morah and the Notzah, and many say this was also the same place where the Trumas HaDeshen from the outer Mizbeach was placed, and it was also miraculously Nivlo and Bimakomon. It was miraculously absorbed into the ground. That's the understanding that Rashi has, that the Trumas HaDeshen was also absorbed into the ground. Tosos disagrees. He brings down from the Rabbeinu Tam, he doesn't know where we learn out that the Trumas HaDeshen was also miraculously absorbed into the ground. It was placed there according to that opinion, but it wasn't miraculously absorbed into the ground. Tosos also brings down in the Ramaslan of Loim B'Makom and says that it was Tunim Geniza. You had to go and hide this away. Even if it wasn't miraculously absorbed into the ground, it wasn't allowed to be used by anybody. Midetong Geniza, it required to be hidden away. But whether you say it was miraculously absorbed into the ground or was hidden away in the ground, it was dug into the ground, there was a concern that somebody would dig it up, and that's why it was considered that Afer Hekdesh Le'olav Aser, and this is the understanding that Rashi has in Tamur as well. In any event, these were additional unbelievable miracles that occurred there. Why didn't the Mishnah and also the Brisa that we brought down add them? Shmuel says, no, they are included. So you have to list the following 10 in the following manner. Psule, these things that never had a psul, so should we say the korban omer and the shtei halechem and the lechem upon him, so we listed that as three separate things. So he said these are all psul, that they never became possul, while the tlasu havu, there are actually three, chashvinu b'chad, only count them as one. So that none of these mincha offerings became possul, don't list that as three, only list as one. Now you have two extra. Oh, apik trei, take out those three and make it into one, vial tray, and add these two. They're of Shemaya and Abaye just brought down, and you're up to 10 again. Where it says, if that's true, ihachi, bilu and nami, treyhabu. So then the two things that both Rav Shemaya and Abaye said are absorbed into the ground. Rav Shemaya said about the klicheres, and Abaye said about the morah, the notzah, the dishan pleach pnimi, the dishan amenorah, and the Trumas HaDeshen, so they were all miraculously absorbed to the ground. So count that as one, then you only have nine. And therefore, Chashvinu B'chad counted as one Chosulu, and you only have nine. Someone says, yeah, you do have nine, you're right, but Ikod Nami Yachriti, there's another one that should be included in the count. Dharmi Yeshua and Levi said, Nase God, the whole Yanasib Lechem upon him, that there was an additional Nase that was done with Lechem upon him, besides the fact that it never became possible, but there was another nace, Siluko Kisiduro, a very, very famous nace, that it was put onto the Shulchan on Shabbos the week before it would be taken off, and it was piping hot. They baked it on Friday, sometimes they baked it on Thursday, sometimes they baked it on Wednesday, depending on whether Thursday, Friday was Rosh Hashanah. They couldn't bake it on Rosh Hashanah or Shabbos. They baked it Wednesday afternoon. And if it was a one-day yontif, if Friday was yontif, then they baked it Thursday afternoon. And in a regular week where there was no yontif, they baked it Friday afternoon. So sometimes it was actually for either 8, 9, or 10 days before it was taken off from the Shulchan. And you would go and put it on the Shulchan on Shabbos, piping hot. And then they would take it off a week later. It was still piping hot. There was no hot plate there. It was on a cold Shulchan. It was either for a short period of time on a marble shulchan, but most of the time it was on a golden shulchan, on the regular shulchan. And therefore, Rabbi Shulman Levi says that this was a Nez Gadol, Siluko, when they took it off, it was still piping hot, Kisidura, like when they put it on. And this is based upon the Pasuk. Shinema, the Pasuk says, Losum Lechem Chom B'yom Hiloko. This Pasuk from Shmuel Aleph tells us this miracle, that the Lechem upon him, which wasn't allowed to be baked on Shabbos. So, okay, if you bake it on Shabbos and you take it off on Shabbos, it's piping hot. No, it was baked, like I said, either Friday afternoon or Thursday afternoon in some occasions, sometimes Wednesday afternoon, then put on the Shulchan on Shabbos and then take it off a whole week later. And this was a miracle that was the 10th miracle that we're talking about. The Gemara still says the Suleka. Weren't there other miracles? What about the following? Rav Levi. Rav Levi said, we have the following Misara handed down to us from father to father to father to from father. Markum Aron Eino Min Amida, the Aron Kodesh, stood in a fourth dimension, so to say. It wasn't calculated into the actual space of the Holy of Holies, Lifnai Vilifnim. Why is that? Because we know that the Aron Kodesh had certain dimensions to it. It was 2.5 amos by 1.5 amos by 1.5 amos. That was the actual Aron, without even the bottom, without the poles. We learned previously, and we'll learn it again, that the poles pushed out against the curtain separating the Kodesh and the Kodesh Kedoshim. But according to most, the Arun was right plop in the middle of the Holy of Holies. Now, the Holy of Holies was a relatively small chamber. It was 20 Amma by 20 Amma. And the Arun was, as I said, 2.5 by 1.5 by 1.5 in terms of height as well. So it was a physical entity. And yet, it says that to each side of the Arun, there were 10 Amma. Now, if the whole Holy of Holies, the Kodesh Kodoshim, was only 20 Amma by 20 Amma, and you put something inside it that is 2.5 Amma by 1.5 Amma, so how does it take up no space? Because it says to the north, to the south, to the east, and to the west, there were 10 Amma. So this was a miracle. Levi says we have a Masorah, that the Aron itself didn't take up any space, Enam and Amida, and yet it was there. So it was like in a different dimension. The Aron was a miracle that was every day. The idea that it didn't take up any space was a miracle that could be seen every day in the Beis HaMikdash. Furthermore, Yama Rabbi Noi, Amar Shmuel, he adds another one. Rabbi Noi says the name is Shmuel. Keruvim b'neis hayomdim. The similar thing was with the Keruvim. The Keruvim were on top of the Aron. And the Keruvim, it tells us, had a wingspan. There were two Keruvim. They, according to some, was Keruvia. It was like young children. One was a young man, and one was a young woman, or a young boy and a young woman, a young girl. And they were having the tips of their wings of these Keruvim touching each other. Now, the wingspan of each one was 5 Amma to the right and 5 Amma to the left. You have two of them, and they're touching each other. That's 20 Amma. Oh, everything is good. It fits exactly in. It's only one problem. They also had a body. So the body of the Keruvim is not included in this calculation as well. So Keruvim, B'nei Sayomdin, they also didn't take up space. The bodies of the Keruvim didn't take up physical space. In our physical world, it doesn't have the capacity to fit in there, and yet both Rabbi Levi and Rabbi Noi Amar Shmuel said that these, the Aron and the Keruvim, they stood there b'neis. So we have additional nisim. How come they're not mentioned? So Gemara says, these are nisim de barai kachoshiv. Nisi de gavoi lo kachoshiv. Barai means like brisa, outside. So the nisim that all of Klai Yisrael could see, so those are included over here. However, the nisim that were inside the Kodesh Kedoshim, which weren't visible to anybody, or even the Kohen Gadol only went in there one day a year on Yom Kippur, so then, the Nisi, the Gaboi, the ones that are inside, the Lefnai, the Lefnim, we don't include in the miracles of the Beis HaMikdash because they couldn't be seen by people. Where it says, if that's true, Ihochi, Lechem Aponim Nami, Nisi, the Gaboi, okay, it's not the Kodesh Kedoshim, it's only in the Kodesh, it's in the Heichal, but the common folk couldn't see the Lechem Aponim, but yet you're including the Lechem Aponim in a Nase that is inside, and yet they're listed, so how come the Lechem Aponim are listed, but the fact that the Aron and the Keruvim, B'nei Sayomdim, that's not included. It seems to be consistent. Either you include things in the Heichal, or you don't include things in the Heichal. Shmuel says, no, the Lechem Aponim were also shown to all of Klai Yisrael. And this was one of the events, one of the most exciting events that happened on the Shlosh Regalim. Lechem Aponim Nisei Dibarayhu, they were a miracle that was visible to everybody. Why is that? The Amar Reish Lakish said, Maidah said, what does the puzzle mean when it tells us, Al HaShulchan HaTor? It says that you should put the Lechem Aponim Al Shulchan HaTor Lufnei Hashem. You should put it on the Shulchan HaTor that is in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's inside the Heichal, but you'll call it the Shulchan HaTor. Why is it called the Shulchan HaTor? That's implying Tor Miklal Shu Tomei. It's called the Shulchan HaTor, implying that it could become Tomei. But how could that be? And we turn to the Omud Beis, Chaf Aleph Omud Beis. It tells us that the Shulchan inside the Heicho, which was where the Lechem Upon were on, Kli Eitz HaOsu LeNachasu. It is a large wooden utensil that is stationary. It is planted in its place, it's not moved about. And we know that the rule is, from Parsha Shmini, that v'chol kli eitz ha'osu l'nachas eino mekabel tuma. If something is a large, stationary, immobile kli, and it's made out of wood, so then, by definition, it's not mekabel tuma. So this shulchan, even though it was plated, it was considered like a kli eitz, because it specifically was told to be made out of kli eitz, and then you had to go and be mitzapit, you plated it with gold. And that's what Tosus brings down over here. In Kli Eitz Osu L'Nachas, he tells us that the halacha is, Shaini Shulchan D'Rachmona Kari Eitz, the Psukim in Yecheskel say, HaMizbeach Eitz, Sholosh Amos, so it's specifically known as HaMizbeach Eitz, so even though it's plated, and normally the plating would make it able to be Mekabel Tumah, here it's not able to be Mekabel Tumah. In any event, you see that this is a Kli Eitz that is Osu L'Nachas, it's not moved about. and therefore it's not makabel tuma. And by the way, something that's not makabel tuma is v'chotzeis b'pnei tuma. It can prevent tuma from going through. So if it's in the doorway, you have something that can't accept tuma. It can block tuma from going from one room into another room. Now, why is it called a shulchan hatar if it can't become tuma? So of course it's a shulchan hatar. So therefore, this drasha is made. Therefore, Ella Milami, that comes to teach us shulchan hatar, that it could become tameh. Shemagbino soli oliyot regolim. It wasn't a stationary kli. It wasn't a kli ha'osu l'nachas. It wasn't a mobile kli. It actually was picked up and brought to show all of Klai Yisrael. So it was brought to the doorway of the ulam and the heichal, the omrim, and they would see that this was moved. Now the lechem upon him had to be on it at all times. That's why they had to move the shulchan. They couldn't just pick up the breads and show the breads. They had to pick up the whole table. So therefore, it's not a kli eitz ha'osu l'nachas, but it's a mobile metaltalin type of a kli, wood that's metaltalin. If it's a kli, can in fact become tameh. And they would show all of Klai Yisrael this miracle of omrim lehem. Look, chibaskam. Look how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves you. Look how much you are beloved in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shesiluko kisiduro. That's the nace that we put it on piping hot last week, and it still remains piping hot, even though it's been a long time, 8, 9, or 10 days from when it was actually baked. And this is based upon the pasuk that we said before from Shmuel Aleph, Shinemar, Lasum Lechem Chom B'yom Ilako. It was just as hot on the day that they took it off as the day they put it on. Again, the Mara continues and says, Vesuleka, really? And there aren't any other miracles? What about this one? Vama Rav Hoshaya. Rav Hoshaya said, Bishar Shabana Shlomo's Beis HaMikdash, with the time that Shlomo Melech built the Beis HaMikdash, he made a most miraculous garden, right? People have fancy gardeners that go make beautiful gardens to them. Nobody has ever made the garden of Shlomo Melech. Shlomo Melech's garden wasn't made out of normal garden growths. It was made out of gold. Notabo, he planted kol mine megodim shelzov. He planted all different types of trees that bore fruit, and the fruit that they bore was golden fruit. This was a great source of income. You all heard of the goose that laid the golden egg? So here Shlomo Melech planted trees that were gold, and they blossomed, and they produced fruit. And at the right time, they bore golden fruit. And when the wind would blow, these fruits would fall off. The Kohanim would go and collect them, and this was a wonderful source of income. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, this is a Pasuk from Tehillim, Yirash Kalivonon, period. The Livonon is a reference to the Beis HaMikdash, and it says when there would be this rash, in other words, the winds would blow, and they would blow in the Beis HaMikdash, the fruits would come off. This great miracle of Shlomo Melech was Nebuch destroyed. Kishenichnasu nochrim lehechol Nebuch, when Nebuchadnezzar came in and destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, Yavesh, this unbelievable miracle that Shlomo Melech had performed for him, that these golden fruit trees grew golden fruit, so the Goyim destroyed this. They dried up. When they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made these trees dry up. The Goyim never benefited from them. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says in Nochum, Uferach Levonon, the flowers of Levonon, again, Levonon is the Beis HaMikdash, Umlo, were destroyed. However, the Gemara ends off very optimistically. The Osid Lavo, Mirtz Hashem, when the Mashiach comes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lachzir, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will restore this. Shenemar, Paroach, Tifrach, V'sogel, Avgilas, V'ranin, Kvod, HaLevonon, Nitan Lo. So this is another passage from Yeshaya, where it tells us that Yezus Hashem in the future, these trees will again go and grow their fruit, and everybody will be very happy, and the kavod of the Levadon, the kavod of the Beis HaMikdash, will have been given back to her. Now, the Suleko, why wasn't this included? This sounds like a pretty amazing miracle. Shmuel says, when we were listing these 10 miracles, we weren't listing things that were there all the time. We were only listing things that were somewhat unique and that occurred on an occasional basis. So, Nisei Dikvie Lokachoshev, the miracles that were always there, so that wasn't listed. We only listed the miracles that occurred on a time-to-time basis. They occurred on an irregular basis. So therefore, that's why the 10 that we listed were listed and not all of these extra miracles. And now, Hashto, the Osis Lachi, now that you gave us this Teretz, so then we can understand why we didn't even list. Before we said it was because it was inside the Holy of Holies, that's why it wasn't listed. But Aron Akruvim, so those miracles were also Nisei Dikviye. And therefore, Aron Akruvim Nami, Nisei Dikviye Ninu, and that's why they weren't listed. Instead of us having to say that because they were Nisim, they were Begavoy inside, we could give this Teretz, Hashto, the Osis Lachi. Since you gave this Teretz, we could give that Teretz there as well. So the bottom line is, we now have our list of 10 miracles that occurred, with, of course, there were many other miracles. Amar, now, we had said, the Ashan HaMarocha, that the Ashan of the Marocha, so it the smoke that came off of the top of the outer Mizbeach, those pyres, which we'll see were in certain shapes, they were never blown away. They were never dissipated by the wind. So Gemara says, Umi havi Ashan HaMarocha, but was there really smoke coming off the Mizbeach? One of the other miracles was that there was no smoke coming off the Mizbeach. But Tanya, we're learning the Braisa, Chamisha Dvarim Nemru Be'esh Al HaMarocha. There were five miracles or things that were said about the fire that was on top of the outer Mizbeach. Number one, Revutzo Kari. It was crouched. The fire gave the appearance of a crouching lion. It was crouched like a lion. Revutzo Kari. That was number one. Number two, Uvaro Kechama. It was as clear and as brilliant as the sun. That's number two. The fire actually had a mamashis to it. Rashi explains, Bishal Hevishla, even the flickering flames over here, they had a real mamashis to them. They were very substantive. Number four, V'ocheles lachin kivation. This fire was so powerful that it could go and burn anything that was on it, even things that were wet. Normally fire doesn't burn wet wood, for example. But anything that was on it, this fire was so powerful, it could burn lachin, moist things, just like yevation, just like dry things. And finally, number five, v'enu malashen, it did not have any smoke. So therefore, if it did not have any smoke, how can you tell me that the ashan of the marocha, the smoke of this pyre, wasn't dissipated by the winds? It didn't have over here any smoke. So Gemara answers, no, ki kamrinon, that which we said, that there was smoke on the top of these fires that was never dissipated by the wind, ki kamrina, that was b'dehedro, that was the fire that the Kohanim had to add. As the Pasuk says, the Tanya, it says, even though there was a fire that came down from Shemayim, that's why one of the reasons why the two older sons of Aaron and Kohen, Nadav and Avihu, were killed, because they brought an Eish Zorah themselves, and they should have relied upon the Eish that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to bring down. But nevertheless, it says, U'nosnu, b'nei Aaron and Kohen, Eish al Mizbeach, there also was a separate requirement. After HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent down the fire, we have a requirement to put up fire on top of the Mizbeach as well. So that fire that we put up had smoke. The fire that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought down, that did not have smoke. So even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought down the fire from Shemayim, nevertheless, mitzvah l'havi min hedra, we also have the mitzvah to bring the Shnei Gizrei Eitz, the two pieces of wood. We have a mitzvah to go and put wood onto the fire. So therefore, the fire that we put down had smoke. The fire from HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not have smoke. Nadigmar says, the Eish was Revutzo Ko'ari. This fire that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent down was like a crouching lion. I, Votanya, will learn another Braisa. So I'm a Rabbi Chanina, Skana Kohanim. Rabbi Chanina, Skana Kohanim, who worked in the Beis HaMikdash for many, many years, and we have stories throughout Yuma as well as in other places where he's, this is what I saw in the Beis HaMikdash. So he said, Ani Risiya, I saw this fire on the Mizbeach, and it wasn't a crouching lion, Ani Risiya, but Urevutzo Kekelev, it was like a crouching dog. So how can you tell me it's a lion? I saw it myself, my own eyes, and it was like a dog. So Gemara says, when did Rabbi Chanina Skana Kohanim live? He lived in Bayis Sheni. So Lokasha, it's not a problem. When we're describing that the Eish in the Mizbeach was like a crouching lion, Kan b'Mikdash Rishon, the first base of Mikdash, it was like a lion. And the second base of Mikdash, Kan b'Mikdash Sheni, when Rabbi Chanina Skana Kohanim, so then it was like a dog. The Marsha says, why b'davka these animals, why a lion and why a dog? She says the Bayis Rishon was built by Shlomo HaMelech, who came from Shevet Yehuda, which is referred to as a lion. And the Bayis Sheni, the Beis HaMikdash, was in part built by the Parsiim, the Persians. And they're referred to as a Shegel. Shegel is a type of a dog in Psukim. And therefore, the second Beis HaMikdash, to allude to the idea that it was in part made by Persians, so it had the fire had the shape of a dog, and the first Beis HaMikdash was made by Shlomo HaMelech, it had the shape of a lion, to allude that it was made by Shevet Yehuda, by Shlomo HaMelech. Okay. Now the Gemara says, you're implying that the Mikdash Sheni had fire from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Is that really true? Mikdash Sheni, mi havoi, was there a fire that came down from Shemayim, the Beis HaMikdash, and the second Beis HaMikdash? That doesn't seem to be true. Rav Shmuel bar Inya, Rav Shmuel bar Inya said that Ma'idichsev, what does the pasuk mean when it says, this is a pasuk from Chagai where it says, the Erze Bo V'Kovdo, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you'll build the second base of Mikdash, I'll be very, very happy with it, V'Kovdo, and I will get covered from it. Now, V'Kovdo is spelled deficient. It's spelled without the hay at the end of it. So it should have said, V'Kovdo with a hay. The Karinon, the Kovdot, but it's spelled and pronounced without the hey, and nevertheless the pronunciation is the same. So Maishnod Mukhusar hey, why is it missing this hey? This Ksivu Kri, what is it coming to teach us? So Rav Shmuel Bar Inya tells us, Chamisha Dvarim Shayu Beis HaMikdash Rishon LeMikdash Sheni. There were five things that were present in the first Beis HaMikdash that were not present in the second Beis HaMikdash. In other words, there were differences between the two Bati Mikdash. The first Beis HaMikdash had more Kedusha than the second Beis HaMikdash. What are these five things? Ve'el Hain. The following were missing in the second Beis HaMikdash. There was no Aron, there was no Kapores, and there were no Kruvim. So this is all listed as one, Rashi tells us. The Aron, the Kaporis, and Kruvim are all listed as one item. Kulu Chod Milsa, Rashi says. Ushchina lo sharsabo. The Shechina, which would be the second thing, was not shores on the second base of Migdash like it was on the first base of Migdash. So there were physical items missing, the Aron and the Kaporis, which is the top of the Aron, and the Kruvim, which were on top of the Kaporis. So those things weren't present. That's a physical thing. And the second one is that the Shechina's presence wasn't felt. Rabbi Kiva Eger in the Gilui Nashas over here says in the Medrash Rabbah in Parshas Baloscha, Nokat Menorah v'lo Nokat Shechina, that they didn't have the original menorah in the second Beis HaMikdash, and that was what was missing. Okay, whatever it was, that's one and two. Number three, if Ruach HaKodesh, there was no longer Nevuah in the second Beis HaMikdash. That's a story that we're going to learn about later in our Masechta, that the concept of Nevuah was taken away when HaKodesh Baruch Hu took away the tremendous desire that people have for Avodah Zarah. So quid pro quo, if you don't have the tremendous desire for Avodah Zarah, so you don't need a counterbalance of Nevuah. So therefore, that was taken away. We'll have a phenomenal story about this later in the Masechta. I realize I just skipped the word, the Eish. Eish was number two. After the Aron, the Kaporis, and the Kruvim, you have the Eish, the special fire. That's the whole question. I'm sorry I skipped that. So the Eish, the fire from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, was the president in second Beis HaMikdash. So that's the Kasha. This is going to be the Kasha. How can you tell me that there was a fire that came from Shemayim in the second Beis HaMikdash that was like the shape of a crouching dog? There was no fire in the second Beis HaMikdash. So that's really number two. The Shechina was number three, or the menorah is number three. The Ruach HaKodesh, there was no Nevuah, that was number four. And then the Urim, the Tumim, that was number five, that you had no Urim v'Tumim. This is a machlokas amongst the posts. What does it mean, no Urim v'Tumim? This is one of the begadim that the Kohen Gadol has to wear. If he doesn't wear this, so then he's going to be mechusar begadim, and the avodah will be possible, and he's going to be chayav misa. So some suggest one of two terutzim, that there was an Urim v'Tumim, but the actual klaf that was placed inside the Urim v'Tumim wasn't present. That's one option. Well, the other option was, no, the actual klaf was there inside the Urim v'Tumim. But in the first Beis HaMikdash, the Kohen Gadol could go and ask the Urim v'Tumim questions, and the Urim v'Tumim would respond through a miracle. And that miracle didn't occur in the second Beis HaMikdash. In any event, these five things were not present in the second Beis HaMikdash, and one of them was the fire. So how can you tell me that there was a fire from Shemayim in the second Beis HaMikdash? So the Gemara says, there was a fire in the second Beis HaMikdash. Mi ava haba. It was in fact there. However, siyua lo mesaya, but it didn't work, so to say. There was a fire present, but it didn't go and absorb the korbanos. It didn't go and do the things that the fire in the first Beis HaMikdash did. So it was present, but it wasn't functional. And that's the difference between the first Beis HaMikdash and the second Beis HaMikdash. Tana Rabban, we learn another braisa. Sheish ishos hein. There were six types of fire. There is number one, yesh ocheles vein ushosa. There's a fire that can consume solid things but doesn't consume liquids. More we'll explain what all these fires are, but that's easy to understand. That's a regular fire. First we'll read all six and then we'll explain each of them. So that's number one. Number two, yesh shosa vein ocheles. There is a fire that actually eats liquids but doesn't eat solids. Then number three, v'yesh ocheles v'shosa. There's a fire that eats both solids and liquids. Number four, v'yesh ocheles slachin kivation. There's a fire that can go and eat up. It can burn through things that are both moist and things that are dry. Number five, v'yesh eish docha eish. There's a fire that can push aside another fire. And the last one is v'yesh eish ocheles eish. There's a fire that can eat up another fire, that can burn another fire. What are these six things? So, the Gemara explains, v'yesh eish ocheles v'yesh ocheles. There is a type of fire that can go and eat up solids, it can burn solids, and it won't burn liquids, so hadi dan, that's our regular fire. Number two, shosa that eats up drinking liquids, the eino ocheles, but doesn't eat up solids, that's the fire of the cholin. A sick person, a chola, has a fever, so that fever makes them not want to eat, but it makes them very, very thirsty. So to say, this fire burns up the liquids inside them, it makes them thirsty, but it doesn't burn up the solids. Number three, ocheles v'shosa. It goes and eats up both solids and liquids. This is the fire of Eliyahu, the famous miracle that happened on Har HaKarmel. The Pesukim tell us in Melachim Aleph, that Eliyahu said to the Nevi Habal, I'm going to drench my entire Mizbeach with water. And he knew that they had tried to cheat. They had stuck a man underneath their Mizbeach to light a fire. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a nace, and he killed that person. A snake came and bit him. So he knew that they were cheaters. So he said, I'm going to show you that I'm not a cheater. He drenched the entire area with water. So they said, V'samayim asher bata'ala lichecha. So he put water in like a moat around the Mizbeach, and he drenched everything. And nevertheless, the fire that came down from Shemayim ate up the liquids and the carbon as well. That's number three. Ocheles lachin kiveshin, the fire that eats things that are moist as well as things that are dry, that's the maracha, that's the fire in the first Beis HaMikdash. Then number five, yesh eish docha eish. So what is this referring to? This is referring to the miracle of the Gavriel. The Gavriel, the malach of the eish, he was the one that asked the Kosh Baruch Hu, the malach of water, said, let me go put out the fire. When Hanani, Mishael, and Zayah were thrown into the Kivshan Eish, so the malach of water said, let me go put it out. And Gavriel said, no, it would be a bigger nace if I put it out, if my fire pushes that fire away. So it was nice and cool inside. Gabriel's fire pushed the fire of the Kivshan aside, but it burned up all the people around it. He pushed it away. So the people that threw, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah, and all the people in the front rows watching this spectacle, they were all burned to a crisp. It was unbelievably hot. So here was fire pushing away fire. And finally, V'yesh Eish, Ocheles Eish, that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Shekhinah, the Amamar, as we learned, Hoshi Netzbor Beinem Usrofen. And the Baisa Bereshis, when the Malachim said, why are you building man? Why are you creating man? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, that's what I want to do. And he, so to say, put his finger, Kaviyochel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have a body, he doesn't have a guf, doesn't have a finger, but he put his finger there and he burned those Malachim. Nadigmor says, we go back to the miracle that we discussed before, where it said that all the winds of the world couldn't dissipate the smoke that came off from the Mizbeach. So the Gemara says, on the last day of Chag, Chag is always a reference to Sukkot. The Mefarshim discussed, does this mean on Hoshana Rabbah or does this mean Shmini Atzeres? Because normally we say the last day of the Yontif of the Chag, we're talking about Hoshana Rabbah. But in this situation, some say that it means Shmini Atzeres. So after either Shmini Atzeres or Hoshana Rabbah was over, Hakol Tzofin Lashana Merocha, everybody would look to see what type of a year it would be. They would look to see what was in store for the crops by looking at the way that the Merocha, the smoke that came off the Beis HaMikdash out of Mizbeach, which way it was blowing. So Hakol Tzofin, they would all look, Lashana Merocha, to see which way it was blowing. Note that Klapi Tzofin, if it was blowing towards the north, in other words, the wind was coming from the south, Anin Smechem, the poor people would be very happy, Ubali Batim Atzevim, and the rich people would be sad. Why is this? Because if the poor people would be happy, it's because there'd be a lot of produce at a low price. When the wind is blowing from the south, pushing the fire, flames, the smoke towards the north, so then in this situation, there'd be a lot of rain. And therefore, Perusei Markivim, you wouldn't be able to store fruit for a long period of time. So the rich people who had an abundance of crops would have to sell it easily and at a low price. And that would be great for the poor people and not so good for the rich people. It was vice versa. If it was not the Klapi Dom, if a northern wind blew this Marocha, the Ashan over the Marocha to the south, so then that would mean that there would be enough rain to have a great crop, but it wouldn't be so humid that it would ruin the crop. So Aniyim Atzevim, the Aniyim would be upset, they would be sad. Ubali Batim Smechem, the rich people, the ones who owned the fields, would be very happy because they would have a great produce. There would be enough rain to have a great produce, but it wouldn't be so humid that the crops would ruin. So they could sell them little by little and make a greater profit. And that's Mimnesha, Yishmei Shonim Uwatim. There'd be less rains, they wouldn't go and be Markivin. They wouldn't spoil in the humidity, and therefore it would be great for the people that owned all these crops and not so good for people that have to buy them. Then it says, not to Klapi Mizroch, if the fire blew from the west towards the east, so then Hakosmechem, everybody's happy, that's the perfect amount of rain, enough rain that the crops will be great, and it won't be able to be stored for a long period of time, but it won't be stored for a short period of time, so they'll make a nice profit, but it will be plentiful, the poor people will be able to get it, everybody's happy. If it blows the other way, Klapi Ma'ariv, however, the wind is blowing from the east towards the west, then I call it safe. Everybody's sad because that means there's not going to be a lot of rain and there's not going to be a lot of crops and it's going to be bad for everybody. So, therefore, what do you see from over here? That the winds did blow the fire. It did blow the smoke. So, more says, the also, kedikli. No, it blew them, but it didn't disperse them. It blew them like a palm tree. It swayed like a palm tree. However, via badure, but to dissipate it, lo haba mibad there. It didn't go and do that. Furthermore, we have another bryce that seems to contradict this, what we just said. Amamar, Klapi Mizroch HaKosmechem. We just said that if the wind is blowing from the west towards the east, so everybody was happy. Klapi Marav HaKosmechem. If it blew towards the west, from the east to the west, everybody was sad. Now, That's what we just said, Rabbeinu, but another brisa contradicts this. Mizrachis le'olam yofet. This brisa tells us that the easterly wind is always good, and ma'aravis le'olam kasha, and the western wind is always bad. Now, ruach tzafonis, it tells us that the northern winds, so yofet l'chitin, that's very good for the wheat, b'shar shavi u'shlish, as long as they've matured a certain amount, they've reached a third of their maturity. The kasha l'zesim, it's not good for the olives, b'zman shein chotin, at the times that they're blossoming, and when they're young olives growing, so that's not good for them. And vice versa for the Ruach Dromis. Koshel Chitin, the southern winds are bad for the wheat that's grown Bishar Shevi or Shlish when it's grown a third. It's a third of its maturity. The Yofel is Esim is Manashim Chotin, and it's good for the olives as they're blossoming. That type of wind is good for them. V'amar Rav Yosef, Yitema Mazutra, Rav Yosef, or others say it was Mazutra said, a good way to remember this, which winds are good for which, is that the northern wind is that the Shulchan is in the north, and the southern winds, the menorah, is in the south. So remember that the northern winds are good for what's in its own area, the Shulchan. So the Lechem Aponim is put on the Shulchan, that's grain, that's wheat. So therefore, remember, north is for wheat because that's where the Shulchan is. And remember, in the south, where the menorah is lit by oil. So therefore, that will help you remember. So this is a great mnemonic to remember this. Now, each one, so to say, is good for its own type. The northern wind is good for what's in the north, in the Hechel, which was the Shulchan, and the southern wind is good for what's in the south, the Hechel Menorah. Now, the bottom line is, this tells us the opposite of the first brisa. The first brisa said, when the wind is blowing Klapi Marv from the east to the west, that was, in fact, Hakol Atzeven. And we said that when it blew from the west to the east, so everybody was good. And this price says the opposite. So what's going on? So Gemara says, lo kasha, no, there's no problem. It depends where. Halon v'haluhu. Rashi explains, halon v'haluhu. Mizrachis is yofeh l'eretz bafel. The wind blowing towards from the east to the west, that's good for Bavel. Why? Because Bavel, he eretz lecha, it was a humid land that had lots of water, it was a low land, and the waters all came to it, and therefore, machlas memel, le'olam, it always had a lot of water, and therefore, having lots of water is not good for it. So therefore, when we say that the wind is not good, that was he saying it's not good for the people in Bavel. And for Eretz Yisrael, it's kasha, she eretz harim, because mameris liyavish. So, Eretz Yisrael needs the water. So one Bryce is talking about when the wind will cause a lot of water, that's no good. That's for Bavel. And that would be good for Eretz Yisrael. And the other one says when there's not a lot of wind, that's not bringing a lot of rain, that's bad for Eretz Yisrael. And that's good for Bavel. With this, we conclude today's shir and this beautiful first parak of Yuma. Hadron Alecha Shivas Yomin, Hadron Alecha Shivas Yomin, Hadron Alecha Shivas Yomin. We look forward to learning you again, hopefully not before the next Daf Yomi cycle, but at least certainly by then, Mitzvah Shem, we shall be healthy to learn it then, and Mitzvah Shem tomorrow will begin the beautiful second parak. That concludes today's shir.